called an emergency edition of Trinity Terms. So what's been happening has prompted us to be back in action 48 hours after our last, our usual Monday podcast. So introducing myself, I'm Joe McHugh from Video Celts. Alongside me, I've got James Forrest from the Celtic blog, and I've got Eric Knott from the Celtic. So three independent Celtic voices. None of us are on the Celtic media circuit. We don't get to a token question once a month, a media conference, and walk away thinking, we're the Celtic media guys. So there is so much to talk about, but we're confining ourselves to 1 hour tonight. There's umpteen different directions to go on after Michael Nicholson absolutely surpassed himself. We've all got expectations for the Celtic chief executive, but boy, did he go the extra mile. As we were talking, we were on from 6:30 to 7:30 on Monday. That was around the time that he pushed the button and got rid of Adam Eder. So that's Celtic scored 14 goals in the Champions League last season, and Michael Nicholson's managed to sell 7 of those goals. So we've got seven of last season's Champions League goals left, mainly down to Daizen Maeda. So the club is in one hell of a mess, but there is an upside to that, a glass half full side, because it has wakened up quite a lot of the support. We used to be just a cynical trio shouting at the moon from a distance, but a few more people have realised that even though Celtic have won 14 of the last 15 titles, the club is in a mess. We are not as good as Qarabag. We are not as good as Kaira Almaty. We're not as good as Paphos from Cyprus. They'll all be playing in Tuesdays and Wednesdays over the coming weeks. We've got the leftover slot, the Thursdays. Away to Red Star Belgrade, or whatever they call themselves these days, and then a glamorous home tie against Braga on a Thursday night, kicking off at 5:45 in Europa League. And there's going to be a lot of interest in the attendance at Celtic Park that night. So much to talk about. James has been well connected today. We've just had a statement from the Green Brigade, which covers a hell of a lot. They've got reach. They're a very modern organisation. Well, they've been on the go for the best part of 20 years, but they've got they're close to the pulse of the Celtic support. Their statement was fantastic. Last night we had a great statement from the Affiliation of Celtic Supporters Clubs, not the Association of Celtic Supporters Clubs, or the Celtic Supporters Association. So there are loads of different strands of the Celtic support organised in all sorts of different ways, but most of them are coming together and thinking, enough's enough. This leading sports lawyer, Michael Nicholson, has been getting away with it for too long. At some point in September, we should get the Celtic annual report for the year to the 30th of June 2025. Nicholson will have picked up £1 million, there or thereabouts, in salary and bonuses. Michael, it's time to start earning it, and that starts with opening your gob. We don't want to hear penalty to Rangers. We don't want to see you nervously looking to your left to see if Peter approves of what you're saying. So the spotlight, I think, is very, very much on Michael Nicholson. He's been getting away with it for too long. But I'll pass over to James to let off some steam over the events of the last 48 hours since we were last letting off some steam about Celtic. Over to you, James.
First of all, I'd say to Baz over at One Celtic Fans View that I was very grateful for the invite to go on yesterday and let off some steam, and I think I did that over there. We're going to try and get him on here very soon because he's an excellent guy and he's very passionate about the club. And there's a few other guys I would like to come on as well for the same reason. You know what? I've spent the last maybe 48 hours in a bit of a foul mood, which kind of leads on for events of the last fortnight. I think I've spent the last fortnight in a bit of a foul mood. But tonight I'm actually pretty happy for a change. Because the Green Brigade statement tonight was outstanding. And the number of fan media outlets who signed it, the number of supporters' buses who signed it, was a credit to the ability of this support of ours to come together and take collective action when it's necessary. Some of us have been saying that it's been necessary for a while, but whatever gets us there is fine. It's fine by me. It has taken a minor disaster. It could have taken a catastrophe. I'm glad it didn't take a catastrophe. I think that there are a lot of people who have seen catastrophe looming not far down the road, though. Because if you look at the way that this board behaved in the summer of Ange, well, that we have waited so long on the back of a verbal agreement for Eddie Howe, right up until the point where pre-season had started, and then to have failed so spectacularly to get the man, and to have then taken a wild left-field punt, which, by the way, is what Ange was, and let's not be under any illusions about it, there was no great strategy behind that. It was a wild left-field punt, and they crossed their fingers and hoped for the best, and they got luckier than they would ever have believed. We cannot let these people take us into another summer, because they have proved absolutely incapable in the past. And if we've learned anything, it's that they haven't learned anything. And the reason they haven't learned anything is that they don't think there's anything that they have to learn. They are absolutely convinced that they are geniuses, and they are convinced that they know best, and they are convinced that they don't have to listen to anybody. And if they take us into another summer, that catastrophe will hit us like a sledgehammer. And enough people have now realised that that's coming to say, no, we're going to prevent that. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the best I've felt in a fortnight. I am over the moon.
That's very upbeat. Eric, what's the view from Ireland? You've got a little distance physically between your home and the events at Celtic Park, but emotionally, there's probably the people, I don't know, is it 5,000? How many thousand are at Celtic Park from Ireland every week? They put in an awful lot of effort, and they've watched Celtic winning trophies, they've watched the league wins, they've enjoyed all that, but they also know what could be possible from Celtic, and we don't see anything like it. So what's your take in the last 48 hours been?
Well, I mean, I've been inundated with messages from, you know, fellow supporters and friends in relation to the debacle that has been the transfer window. And obviously, at the Celtic supporters club on Sunday at the game, there was an awful lot of, you know, just total feeling of helplessness because of the performance. Just no, what would you say, no faith in anything happening in the transfer window, which we discussed in detail on Monday night. And I think the end result didn't, as I'm sure it's the same for you guys over there, didn't shock anybody over here. It's sort of like what James said on Monday. I was very much of the same opinion. I think most of my fellow supporters over here were of the same opinion that we expected little and got nothing, effectively. So we weren't disappointed. We were, I think, not at all surprised by the outcome of Monday night. Not at all surprised even at the outcome of last night's shenanigans with regards to getting Iñárritu over the line. The whole thing is just, and I'm very much of the same opinion as James in that regard, the whole thing has just, I feel, finally started to galvanise the support. It's made everybody realise that there's something radically wrong at the club, and it's made everybody realise that the only way that it's going to be fixed is if we all come together as a support and we work to try and get it fixed. Now, if that comes through meaningful communication with the board, and if the board is willing to open the channels to discuss this disaster amongst many disasters over the last few weeks, then we're willing, I'm sure, as fans, to sit down and listen to what they have to say. The problem is, I very much feel, and I wrote this in my article today, I very much feel that this is going to be an effort at appeasement and nothing else. And appeasement it's just going to be appeasement to try and get us back on side to make sure that we continue to contribute towards the club in the financial way that we always have. there is all of a sudden a massive worry, I would say, in the boardroom that money is going to start hemorrhaging out of the club because the fan base has had enough. And the strategy going forward is going to be, let's get them back on side so we can continue on the path that that we were on. And in the article I wrote today, I quoted Matthew, I think 12:5, about a house being divided. You know, that we very much have a house divided at Celtic, and a house divided is headed for disaster. And I think if these guys have had the same modus operandi for 25 years, the better part of this century, it's not suddenly going to change overnight. It's not suddenly going to become, you know, a leopard never changes its spots. These guys aren't going to change their way of operating simply because they're incapable of doing this. And it very much goes back to what Boyce said on the show a week and a half ago, that there is an ingrained fear in these guys that if they were to step aside and let somebody else do the job, that somebody else would show them up for what they really are. If they did a better job, the problem is the egos that these guys have. They do not want to be seen as having failed by being shown up by somebody who's better than them. And I think, again, that goes back to Don McKay. Don McKay frightened them. He scared them because they knew he was going to be better at the job than they were. And they wanted to maintain the status quo. And the status quo has led us to where we are today. We slowly but surely, from the day that Peter Lawwell set foot back in the club in January of 23, we have slowly but surely slithered down a slippery slope back to where we were, and then dropped further below that slope. And that has culminated in what we've seen over the course of this whole summer. It's culminated in what we saw at Ibrox on Sunday and at Almaty, or, you know, against Cairo at Almaty over a week ago. And then it finally culminated in the absolute shit show on the transfer deadline day that unfolded on Monday, which is just not acceptable at this level in the sport. We've become the laughing stock of Europe as a club, the laughing stock of Scotland as a club, where we were probably respected for our prowess, not necessarily our beliefs and the kind of club that we are. But I would say there is a lot of clubs in Scotland that are absolutely laughing their asses off at us now. They brought shame on our house. That's what they've done. And the article that I wrote today, I basically said that it's time for us to get involved in bringing the soul of Celtic back, because they have ripped the soul out of the club in the last couple of years. The house divided began in Munich. The fans, the manager, the players all believed that Munich was a platform for better. They all believed that Munich was the stepping stone to becoming a better club in Europe. And we have done nothing since then but regress at an exponential rate, which is, it's been scary. It's been scary the level that we've regressed at since then. And that all was very much on display in Almaty last Tuesday and at Ibrox on Sunday. We have three strikers now available to us who, since the turn of the year, between them, have scored 5 goals. We've taken 60 goals plus out of the front line. If you were to put Kyogo as one of those sales, along with Nicholas Kuhn and along with Ida, we are now 60 plus goals down on our attack. And that's a huge amount of goals to take out of any attack. And that has been replaced now, because it has been replaced, by three strikers who scored 5 goals in the year to date. Since the turn of the year, 2024 into 2025, those guys have scored 5 goals. And that's... we're expected as fans to accept that. Now, Iheanacho, Brendan might get a tune out of him again. He's 28. There's probably a little bit of life if Brendan got a tune out of him when he had him at Leicester. But when Brendan was looking for a top-class striker, I sincerely doubt that this was the guy who was top of his list. This guy rejected us in the last transfer window, which was a mess because we sold Kyogo and we were desperately scraping around the last knockings of that transfer window to try and get a striker in. And Iheanacho was one of the guys on the list. And he rejected us in order to go to Middlesbrough, where he scored 1 goal. That speaks volumes. And look, I'm not going to knock the guy. He might do a job for us. We're not going to know until we see him play. But I mean, even looking at the photographs of him in the media recently, he looks overweight. So, yeah, it's time. That these guys step forward. And this bullshit of, you know, we might have a chat with you towards the end of the month. Not good enough. Now is the time for talking. Not towards the end of the month. And the fan groups culminating in the Green Brigade and their statement this evening have spoken. They've made their feelings clear. Either speak now or forever hold your peace. So, yeah, that's my view on it.
But we're well used to Celtic failing to get their signing targets, but actively going out to weaken the squad is something spectacular. More supporters can maybe shrug their shoulders and take some of the excuses when they don't get the signing targets in, but pushing through, and there's loads of clubs that just tell players. Crystal Palace, the guy was all set to join Liverpool, defender. He's got a year left in his contract. Everything sorted. He'd scored against Aston Villa for them at the weekend. Perfect farewell to the supporters. But a few things fell into place, and Crystal Palace said, sorry, you'll need to stay with us. So they're going to take a hit in a transfer fee, but it's actually a football decision. And this is a club in the soulless EPL deciding, we can't do this transfer. We need you for footballing purposes. We're sorry, but we need you in our defence. Keep going. There's a Europa Conference to enjoy. That's a club that thinks about along football lines. Celtic most certainly aren't. Michael Nicholson is in such an echo chamber, getting told about his own brilliance from selling players, that Brendan Rodgers said on Friday, either can't be sold without a replacement being in first. Nicholson in his own little world decided, I'll go ahead, I'll get that sold. And, oh well, we've got enough up front. Yamada, Johnny Kenny, Dyson Maeda, and who knows what else might be able to score the goals to keep the roof above our head. So it's brand new territory. So James, Eric's hinted that discussions with the board. Let's be honest about this. We're not in the fan media a lot. Surely there is no place for any of the people that have been running the club down, looking after their own self-interest in any future Celtic. Previously, there'll be loads of comparisons getting made to 1994. We don't have new owners waiting in the wings. There's not somebody wanting to buy them out. But I would think a new chief executive has to be the starting point. Someone from outside the club, someone that can bring fresh ideas. If it's Dom McKay too, all well and good. But James, is there any place for the people that, whether it's Peter Lill and his cronies, the non-executive directors that have been asking questions and searching for best practice? I think Brian Wilson's 22 years, Tom Allison's 26 years. Surely all of these guys have to step aside, and a fresh chief executive needs to come in and start reshaping the club and bringing in the sort of ideas that are par for the course across Europe. Is there any place for the people that have failed Celtic so much?
All of them are going to have to go. All of them. The current executive directorship, all of them are going to have to go. Now, we don't need to be hysterical about this, and we don't need to be demanding the resignations tomorrow or something that leaves us completely hollowed out and without a leadership. A planned transition, something that allows people who've served the club well and for a long time to leave with some dignity and the thanks of the support and the thanks of the club. I'm all for it. That's how it needs to be. But it needs to be. And it will be. It will happen. There is no going back for these people. This is what you call a hinge moment, right? As far as I'm concerned, we crossed the Rubicon during this summer. The minute the people who are in charge of your club take a deliberate decision to weaken the manager and to inflict damage upon the institution they're supposed to be representing, they're finished. It's over. There is no going back for any of them. Not a single one of them can remain. And I don't care whether or not they were all involved in that decision. They all sit collectively around that table and they all walk point as far as I'm concerned. They have to accept collective responsibility. There is no place for a single one of them in the future of Celtic. None of them. None of them get to walk away from this unscathed. None of them can claim to have clean hands. And I don't care if the guy in Ireland gives all the orders. You cannot allow, the chief executive of Celtic cannot allow a non-executive director of Celtic to veto every decision that he wants to make. If the CEO has a problem with that, he should resign. He should walk. He should call that what it is, failure of governance, and he should walk. Or he should disobey it and run the club in a proper fashion. Not a single one of them walks away from this. I don't care whether they did it reluctantly. They were all in this together. And they made the decision to withhold money from the Celtic manager and withhold his players from him. And that weakened the team. That cost us a Champions League place. And it may even have consequences above and beyond that this season. The whole of football watched what they did this summer. They watched the shambles that it was. They watched the disaster that it was. And they watched the manager being humiliated and undermined. All of football has seen this. So the idea that we, in the aftermath of this, can just wipe the slate clean and make a fresh start and bring in a new manager next season without that having any consequences is ridiculous. There will be consequences. The next guy who we sit down in that chair for an interview will ask what the hell happened this summer. And these people won't have good answers for him. He'll pick up the phone, he'll ask Rodgers, what are they like to work with? What happened the last summer? Rodgers will tell them, because Rodgers doesn't have to sign a non-disclosure agreement this time. His contract's at an end. He walks away without any obligations. If Rodgers wants to write the tell-all book 2 years, 5 years, 10 years' time, he can do it, and I'm sure he will do it. There is no repairing the damage they've done. None. They've damaged themselves. They've damaged the club. They've shredded their own mandate. It's over. The only thing left is for them to decide the manner in which they leave. They can walk away with some dignity, some self-respect, and they can put the club first, the club they all claim to love. They can put it first, and they can go with their heads held high to an extent. But they're all going to have to go, one way or another.
One point I'll pick up on, there's been so much attention in Dermot Desmond this summer. I don't find it strange. I know where it's coming from. I really don't think that Dermot Desmond has got so much influence. I think he's delegated that to a former chief executive. So there's been everything. Oh, Dermot Desmond, he does have an influence, but I don't see him being involved too much. The setup at Celtic looks after itself. It's self-serving. They know the policies, and whatever money comes in from transfers, you can spend some of that again. So they're all guilty to various extents. But if Dermot Desmond was to take a step back and just let Michael Nicholson be chief executive, Michael Nicholson's got one source to rely on, and that's the guy that brought him to Celtic, the guy that promoted him. Michael Nicholson is wholly ill-equipped to be the chief executive of Celtic. When Michael Nicholson gets on the phone, sometimes he doesn't get on the phone, sometimes he's hiding from the phone. But Michael Nicholson having head-to-head talks with other chief executives, speaking to agents are very, very sharp. Perhaps there might be an agent out there that we could bring in as our chief executive, because they know the lie of the land, they know the territory. So, Eric, how do you see the next month? That's the immediate future. There's going to be plenty of anger and statements and promises and threats coming out. But there's no football this weekend. There'll be a very interesting Brendan Rodgers press conference before the game at Kilmarnock. Yeah. There's then a free midweek, and then there's Partick Thistle in the League Cup. And then it gets a little bit tasty with Red Star Belgrade away. And then Red Star Belgrade away, and then on Saturday, 27th of September, Celtic Park, Celtic against Hibs. So how do you see events turning out over the next couple of weeks? And what's it going to be like when Celtic are playing Hibs at home on the 27th of September?
Well, before I get into that, there's just coming off the back of what James said, there's just a couple of points I want to highlight that I was thinking of that were kind of going around inside of my head. We never touched on the point about Michael Nicholson's dealings with Birmingham City and the way the whole Yang move collapsed, and that it boiled down to the fact that Michael Nicholson was unwilling to answer his phone to the Birmingham City officials. Now, what kind of man in any professional capacity who enters into transfer negotiations with another club then just suddenly decides that the best thing to do is ignore it and it'll go away and not bother to answer his phone to that club? That in itself reeks of unprofessionalism. It's totally unprofessional to treat another club like that. Now, whether these rumours are true or not, the rumours are circulating. And nobody's doing anything to quell the rumours. Nobody's stepping forward to say, no, that didn't happen. So we know they don't speak. We know they don't step forward. But the simple fact is, it seems to me that what you said there, Joel, he leans on somebody to tell him what to do. And if he is incapable of making a decision himself, I get the feeling he just ignores it and hopes it will go away, just as he did with Birmingham City on Monday evening. So there's that point. There's also the other point that I want to make, in that the Ibrox side sold two of their strikers. They made £14.5 million out of the sale of both of their strikers, and they paid that money for the replacements. Now, again, and I don't like comparing us to them, but that is how a club operates. If you were going to sell guys who bagged for them last season 35 goals, you are going to try and replace those goals with a like-for-like striker. Now, I don't know what the guy from Everton is going to be like. We all know that Miowski is proven. Miowski was out there and clearly available. Arthur didn't even look at him. But these guys are basically expecting us to accept what they have given us going forward for the rest of, well, up until January at the very earliest anyway. Okay? And that, as I said earlier on, three strikers have scored 5 goals in the year of 2025 between the three of them. Right? And that's no offense to those guys. These guys could, like I said the other day, Shane Yamada could morph into Kyogre for Ahashi, which we have to hope he does. Johnny Kenny could hit a rich vein of form in the Scottish Premiership, and Brendan might get a tune out in Hinacho. But the simple fact is that when you compare that to what the Ibrox club did, they went out and spent the money they made in their strikers and they brought 2 new replacements in. Okay? I can't flaw that particular way of operating, because that's what you should be doing. They're not afraid to do it because obviously they want to catch us. Now, I'm going to swallow it off point here, but what I will say is that it's clear now that Russell Martin has the players in that he wants to form the backbone of his squad. If he starts getting a tune out of these guys, we're in trouble. That's a big if, okay? But if he does, we're in trouble. So moving on to what the question that you put to me at the start of, about what's going to happen in this month. I honestly feel, and I would be very disappointed if this didn't happen at the first home game, that all hell is going to rain down on these guys. That there is going to be banners all over the stadium, the boys at one end and the Green Brigade at the other will probably put up some pretty damning banners. And I would say that the fan base themselves, there'll be a majority anyway in there, will vocalize exactly how they feel about what's happened. And that will be very much, I'd say, in the tone of booing. Because we all remember Brendan Rodgers' first season and when we played St. Johnstone at home, and we only managed a nil-all draw against St. Johnstone, and the crowd went crazy. They started booing after a nil-all draw. Because, obviously, the 2023 transfer window, we all knew, was farcical, and some of the fans were pretty pissed off at that. And a nil-all draw against St. Johnstone resulted in booing. What's happened this time is a hell of a lot worse. A hell of a lot more, unforgivable. As James said, there needs to be a root and branch clear out of this boardroom now. and nothing else will suffice. Nothing else will suffice in my eyes. What they've done is unforgivable. They have proven categorically they do not care about the best interests of this club. They do not care about the fan base, and they certainly don't care about the manager and his playing squad by doing what they have done. And no amount of appeasement, no amount of mealy-mouthed apologies, no amount of we'll do better in the future, it's all too much. These are the boys that cried wolf. They have bullshitted us for long enough now. In the rare occasions that they do speak to us, they have bullshitted us in every way, shape and form. And there was a clip of Peter Lawwell doing the rounds after Monday night, where I think it was about 13 years ago, where he was asked about investment. And he said, every penny that we get into the club will be invested back into the playing squad. A barefaced lie. So this is what these guys are. They are barefaced liars. They do not tell the truth. They do not have they couldn't lie straight in bed, as we'd say in Ireland. So I see a very, very tough month ahead for them. And if they have any balls, a set of balls between any of them, they will speak up before this international window has ended. They will release a statement saying, and what I would expect is that they are willing to sit down and talk to the fans. They are willing to entertain and answer every question. Not at the fucking AGM, not in 3 weeks' time, not in 4 weeks' time, now, that they're willing to answer the questions that the Green Brigade has put to them. Because the Green Brigade has put those questions collectively together based on the concerns of all fans. They're the questions that are going around in everybody's head. And they're the questions that need to be answered. And you know the reality about this, guys? They don't have the answers.
No, they don't.
They don't have the answers to those questions.
No. That's the they know best. Look at the success we've delivered. So, James, at the very heart, no, I was going to say the heart of this, no, the accelerator in all this is Brendan Rodgers. Yeah. So, we know that whoever's the manager of Celtic, that while Peter Lowell is still around the club, then the football team is never going to be the priority. There's other priorities, such as keeping his beloved old firm relevant, and he's got his man Michael Nicholson doing that and at fantastic rates. And the chances that we've had over the last couple of years to move up a good few gears, but instead we've chosen to move down the way. So whereabouts is Brendan Rodgers in this situation? He's in a very awkward position, but quite clearly there's some long-running grudges held against the manager from 2018-2019. He's came back. He thought he was getting a clean slate, and it's all going to be. We're all going to move forward in the right direction for the betterment of the club. Clearly, that's not the case, and they're so determined to ensure that he doesn't take the club in the right direction, improve on last season where we put down a decent marker in Europe. They're so determined for that not to happen that it's now sabotage, it's self-harm. So, Brendan, we touched on it earlier. His media conference, again, for the Kilmarnock game a week on Friday is going to be fantastic. I hope he just blanks it and says, any questions about the transfer window, any questions about recruitment, lessons learned, speak to Michael Nicholson. So all these media people, they'll go along and they'll ask questions to Rodgers. They're fishing for him to get him to slip up. And when he's under pressure, he comes up with nonsense like, these people bleed Celtic. They certainly do bleed Celtic, but not in the way that he was implying. So it really is time for Brendan Rodgers to say, don't ask me, doorstep Michael Nicholson. So Celtic will be at home to Hibs on September the 27th. Media outlets can go to the front door at Celtic Park. Michael Nicholson's got to make his way from the car park to the front door. So confront him, speak to Michael Nicholson, see how he hides. He was hiding at Ibrox on Sunday. He was possibly watching it from a home of a friend with a heated driveway. So Brendan Rodgers is at the centre of this. He's been put in front of the cameras every couple of days throughout August. He's made some very silly statements. He's been reeling back and trying to keep them on side, but that time is long past. The more he's friendly to them, the more they'll shaft him. Such as when you've sold Kyogo, you'd think, hold back a little bit, but selling Kyogo gave Nicholson the courage, which isn't a word that's used very often in connection with Michael Nicholson, the courage to sell Kuhn without a replacement, and then in deadline day to sell Adam Ida and then bring in an overweight, out of shape, out of everything. Best of luck to him, but...
yeah, I mean, if they think that's acceptable.
Glad you added that bit in there.
Yeah. The guy that we signed yesterday, formerly of Middlesbrough, he was at Middlesbrough briefly, but he had a good reputation at Man City, did all right at Leicester, but he's clearly passed his best, and that's only at the age of 28. So, what it's hard to get the words out, but what position do you think Brendan Rodgers is currently in? If he walked away, if he put in a resignation note, then I don't see many folk being critical. There's always going to be some folk critical of everything that he does. We know that, but on the body of evidence, he's got every right to resign. So where does Brendan Rodgers fit in this complicated, toxic picture?
About a month ago, I changed my tune on Rodgers dramatically. Over a month ago, on here in the blogs. See, I started it with a very naive belief when this summer began. And it was that Rodgers held all the cards when it came to his negotiations with the board. And that in order for them to convince Rodgers to sign a new deal, Rodgers would get what he wanted. And he would get to chart the course for the summer. So he would get his replacements for the players that left. He would get the players that he thought we needed to take the next step. And I thought that Rodgers was in a very strong position. But where I changed tack about 6 or 7 weeks ago was in the realisation, I don't know why it took me so long, that actually there were people on the board didn't give a shit whether Rodgers stayed or not. There were people on the board actually who would rather Rodgers left. And so Rodgers' negotiating position was absolutely non-existent. And at that point, I realised that they were going to screw Rodgers and that the only way that they can do it successfully, the only way that they can make it look as if Rodgers' departure is a good thing for the club at the end of the season when they've made no effort whatsoever to get him to sign a new deal or to satisfy him enough that he would sign a new deal is if Rodgers fails. And that's when I started wondering if perhaps Rodgers wasn't being set up to fail. And that the narrative around the whole club wasn't being toxified for that very reason, or the signings haven't worked out. And that one's been ongoing for a few months, like way before the summer started. The narrative was out there that Rodgers' three big signings had failed and Rodgers wasn't getting the best out of the players. Although up until about January, there was absolutely no evidence to suggest that at all. But that narrative was already out there. Then it was Rodgers' wasted money. And look at the number of players that Rodgers has signed since coming back. You know, forgetting the fact that the first tranche of players were nothing to do with Rodgers. And they all failed. And, you know, it's just been building and building and building. And the longer the Windies went on, the more 100% certain I have been that I was right to see shapes in the shadows and stuff, right? And, you know, you get told that you're a conspiracy theorist when you come up with some of this stuff. I'm not a subscriber to the conspiracy theory that they see the need for a challenge for Ibrox and that if we have to weaken to get one, then that's what they're willing to do. I'm not a subscriber to that theory. But the deliberately damaging Rodgers theory, I know it's a fact. I don't even have the slightest doubt about it. And going into the last week, when Rodgers had made his final demands and his final requests, I knew he wasn't going to get anything that he wanted. I did not expect them to sell Adam Ida without having a replacement in the building. That was an absolute slap in the face to Rodgers. That was a deliberate public repudiation of Rodgers' comments and a calculated humiliation, right? And if, you know, somebody said to me the other day, You're seeing things that are only there. There is no proof that this is happening. I said, well, what? There was an easy way to convince us that this wasn't happening. Over the last fortnight, they could have gave Rodgers even some of what he wanted, even some of it, right? They could have nodded in his general direction, paid him some basic respect, and instead, they chose to humiliate Rodgers instead. Nothing that we've seen in the last fortnight contradicts the view that they've been deliberately sabotaging the manager. Nothing that we've seen contradicts that. Everything that we've seen supports that view. So, yeah, forgive me for being absolutely wedded to that idea now, and I'm not going to shift yet. The thing is, Rodgers is just good enough to pull this off with what they've given him, right? And I've said that for the start. Rodgers is just good enough to win the title anyway, to win the League Cup, gets to the Scottish Cup last stages and put a treble within reach. And if that happens, they're screwed. Rodgers can go out with the applause of the crowd ringing in his ears and nobody will give them a shred of credit for any of it because Rodgers...
There will be no
editorials anywhere giving them credit for a brilliant strategy which has led us to, you know, the summit. That'll be all Rodgers and everybody will know it's all Rodgers. So they depend on Rodgers to fail, but what if Rodgers doesn't fail? They're going to look like absolute shit when he walks out at the end of the season and we end up with a Sean Maloney, some lesser guy in the dugout next season who will give them the kind of management they want, right? Am I worried about Rodgers quitting? No, not in the slightest. I wrote about this today. There's a piece, my piece on it went up at 7 o'clock tonight. It is going up at 7 o'clock tonight. There was a Guardian article this morning about people who rage quit their jobs. It was really funny. There was a lot of good stuff in that article, and I read it with great amusement, especially in the context where we're right now and thinking about the whole Rodgers scenario. And I thought, Rodgers isn't going to rage quit. That's not going to happen. Rodgers might rage stay. And just say, fuck you. I'm going to show you who the man is. I'm going to show you what you're missing. You'll be embarrassed by how well I did for the rest of this season. And I think that's what the man's going to do. I think Rodgers is going to rage stay rather than rage quit. Rodgers is not giving these people what they want. They want Rodgers to resign. They want to be able to blame Rodgers. And I think the only way Rodgers wins is if we win. And I think that's going to help us.
I meant to check, that's showing my lack of professionalism, but has the Europa League squad been announced? Because that's one area for Rodgers to have a little bit of revenge. I wouldn't be surprised if the club signings, some of them missed out in the Europa League, starting off with Simpson Pussy. If Simpson Pussy's left out the Europa League squad, Manchester City aren't going to be very happy, and it might be the end of... I think that's about the only relationship Celtic have with Manchester City. I don't think other clubs are of a mind to do business with Celtic or form that. I mean, you've got these co-op development loans or whatever, the new system in the SPFL. Most Premiership clubs have got a couple of them. Celtic have got a deal with Air United. Two players have went and loaned to Air United, but you could say there was talk of Inverness Caley-Thistle. It seems that Inverness Caley-Thistle don't trust getting players from Celtic. And you could also have a deal with a team in the lower division. But getting back to Brendan Rodgers, Eric, on Friday, he made it very clear that, nope, Adam Ida can't leave.
Yep. Can I ask the guys in the comments if they're hearing us properly?
Right. I'll keep on talking and we'll see what feedback we get. There's a thumbs up from Green for Go. Let's see. We'll see what the next two reactions are. In the comments. Paul, thank you. No news in the Europa squad. So that could be one that Rodgers is holding hostage on. Is Simpson Pussy and other club signings possibly getting left out of the Europa League squad? So that's an interesting one. But getting back to Brendan Rodgers, on Friday he made it very clear that it can't be done. So Nicholson defied the manager. And you can't kid on that a guy that hasn't played for Sevilla is a replacement for Adam Ida. Eric, what do you anticipate Brendan Rodgers' reaction to Ida being sold and no adequate replacement being brought in?
Well, I mean, if you were to go back to January when Kyogo was sold, you could see in all of the interviews in the aftermath of that he was seething. and he wasn't happy. And he wasn't happy that Noel Pearson was brought in back then. To me, it's clear that the board and him are at odds, because if he stood up on Friday and he said that Adam Ida cannot be sold until we get a replacement in, he was obviously given reassurances that somebody would be brought in. He was obviously given reassurances that they were going to get the Dahlberg deal tied up. And maybe he took it on good faith that the deal that he wanted, which I would imagine is Dahlberg, and I wrote an article yesterday where I said, is Iheanacho going to be the Yusuf Malumbo of this window? Which, to me, it looks like he is, unless he is able to lose quite a few pounds and Rodgers gets a tune out of him. But the, like, I posed the question, like, was it a case of, you know, he was given reassurances in good faith that they would have a striker in place by the time the window was shut. Clearly, their negotiation skills are crap, which we saw on Monday night. They did the same thing that they always do. They came in they gave low-ball offers. It just took one club to come in and say, we'll give a better offer, and that was it. Same as John McGinn and Aston Villa. All stuff that the same car crash that we've seen over and over again. And the same undermining of the manager that we saw the last time around in 2018, and the exact same results. So, to me, the reality is like that. As I said, it's a house divided, and as a house divided is headed for desolation. It's that simple. There's no two ways about it. And no matter what he does or says, these guys are working at odds against him. So they're not going to work with him. They're going to try and work against him. But the problem is now, for them, the realization is that the fan base has woken up to what's going on. So they're going to put them in a really tight spot. It's that simple. Fan base is going to put them in a really tight spot. And they're going to have to answer the questions. And Brendan Rodgers is going to just bide his time. He's going to see out his contract. And the simple fact is he will, at the end of the day, probably, as James said, land a double or a treble. He'll walk away with his head held high. But I put it in there a couple of times, and I said, it's not going to happen. Because I don't see these guys being in place by the end of the year if things go the way that we expect. Their positions are untenable. It's that simple. Their positions are untenable now, and they can't expect to be in place to call the shots for what happens next season. And if they did sack Rodgers, you know, or Rodgers, we won't say sack Rodgers, but if Rodgers did decide to walk out the door, nobody would blame him. But that would further enrage the fan base. So these guys are on a lose-lose no matter what they do. Whatever they do from here on out, they're going to lose. And Brendan, he can win. He can win if he walks out the door. He can win if he stays. Nobody's going to hold it against him if he walks out the door because he's in a shit position. They put him in a shit position, and everybody sympathizes with the shit position that they put him in. So that's the reality. If he walks out the door, everybody's going to say, what did you expect? What did you expect to happen if the guy walked, you know, if you treat him like that? He's going to walk out the door. If he stays and he gets a double or a treble and he proves them all wrong, everybody's going to say, look at what they let walk out the door. But I genuinely don't believe it's going to go to that. I'm at the point now where I wouldn't say I'm confident, but I'm optimistic that these guys are not going to be in place come the end of the season. Because the outpouring of rage from the fan base, week in, week out, especially if results start to go against us, is going to be a sight to behold. And these guys, you know, they're not. If they have to, like, the only hope they have is that if we, you know, that the rage is going to be somewhat tempered, is that if we continue winning in the league. If there's humiliations in the Europa League, that's going to cause outrage. If there's any humiliations in the league itself, you know, if we're beaten at home by Hearts or something along those lines, you know, it's going to be outrage. As I said, it's just going to be, they're a lose-lose situation no matter what they do from here on out. They can't win. They just cannot win. And that's the position that they've put themselves in. They've backed themselves into such a corner now that they can't come out of it. And even if they came out fighting, nobody would accept it. And that's the reality. Nobody, and I mean if they came out by coming out fighting, I mean if they came out and they said, right, we promise you faithfully in January, we'll fill all the gaps in the squad, we'll do everything you need. That, as I said earlier on, is appeasement and nothing else. That's all it is. It will be appeasement. As soon as they've done that, by next summer they'll revert back to type. And nobody in these circumstances should fall for that.
No chance. See, that's a point I'd like to pick up on. That's all right, Joe. I will try and keep the historical analogy as brief as possible here. Tony Blair and Gordon Brown fell out over the Euro. When Blair wanted to take us into the Euro, Brown wanted to keep us out of it. The Treasury got to be the guardian of the policy. Brown brought in all these economic scientists and all that, and they gave a big presentation at the cabinet. Half the cabinet walked out in the middle of it. Oh, this is a foregone conclusion. We know where you want to go. And then because there were some people still briefing against Brown, his press officer, Charlie Whelan, gave a notorious briefing to journalists in a London pub one night. They said that the Treasury had settled this. We were only going to go into the Euro. It had been decided for that Parliament, and all sorts of hell broke loose in the Labour Party over it and in the government. Brown and Blair got together after it. They decided that they had to come up with something to appease the media and all that and get everybody off their backs. And so they came up with Brown's famous five tests. And in order to sell that to the public and sell it to the media as something that had came about as a result of a plan and a strategy and a well-thought-out policy, they announced that they were going to do all these national roadshows to sell the idea. And about a month in to like the planning of these roadshows, some campaign guy went to the hierarchy of the party and said, right, we need to start firming up some dates for this. The guy said to him, dates for what? Well, we're going to launch the Euro roadshows. And he's like, you didn't really believe we were going to do that shit. And that's what we have to watch out for here, guys. That's what's going to happen here. The board is going to... It will respond. Of course it will respond. It has to respond. There's pressure now for supporters. And some of the supporters groups have came together and we're speaking with one voice now, finally, right? So of course they will respond. But they will respond with some vague bullshit promises of jam tomorrow or jam somewhere down the line. And that's what they will try and fob us off with. We cannot let that happen. We've got to be on our guard for that. And we've got to be prepared for what our response to that is when it comes, because it is the next move. We are engaged now in a campaign where they're going to try and appease as many people as they can by doing as little as they can. And I'm afraid it's not going to wash this time. As long as we're aware that that's what they're going to try, and as long as we're aware of how they're going to go about it, we will head them off before they even get there. We can't accept some vague garbage about, yeah, we'll undertake a review and we'll look at this somewhere down the line and, you know, oh, we have to get through the season and right now we all have to come together and be unified. It's a bunch of bollocks. Somebody said the other day on one of the fan forums that Rodgers is now in a much smaller group when it comes to loyalty and when it comes to knowing who has his back. He knows the guys above him don't have it. He knows that they don't represent the best interest of the club right now. So the wee tight group, the wee unity, the unity now is between us, the players, and the manager. And we all have to stick together now. We have to give the players and the manager 100% unquestioning, unequivocal support. But when it comes to these guys, they've lost any benefit of the doubt they ever had. We can't even trust any promise they make to us. They have to show us what they're going to do. They have to act rather than just talk. And we can't settle for talk and vague namby-pamby, we'll do this and we'll do that at some future stage. We want to see actual positive action. We want to see a strategy document that tells us where we're going in the next 5 years and how we're going to get there. And that's the bare minimum these guys have to do at this point. But all sorts of talk about, oh yeah, we'll do more listening and we'll find ways to actively engage. It's all a bunch of bollocks. And let's not fall for it, because that's what they will try, undoubtedly.
Yep. So a little bit of self-publicity then. So we had 7,500 people on YouTube watching. I think we did about 500 live on Monday, and it's up at 7,500. So if you've enjoyed this, if you didn't, switch off. But please like. If you haven't already, subscribe. We're just past 1,500 subscribers, and that's good going for a podcast. It's only weekly. I only started off last December, but if this was a publicity issue, then the actions of the Celtic board are certainly helping the growth of this podcast, unfortunately. So if you can like, subscribe, share, do all those sort of things, I'd be grateful. And a personal plea, if there's anyone got a spare ticket for the Kilmarnock game, I've got a 14-year-old nephew that'd absolutely love to be there. So there is still a young, innocent support of Celtic out there. He's pretty clued up and political as well, but he loves forgetting to those rare away games. So if anyone's got a spare Kilmarnock ticket, please get in touch. But we're almost finishing up. So again, I'll promote ourselves. Eric's got the Read Celtic blog. James has got Celtic blog, and I've got Video Celts. You'll get lots of content over on those sites over the next couple of days. There's plenty of decent podcasts as well. So there's lots of good free independent Celtic content out there. So Eric, can you give us a glass half full message for the next couple? Oh, well done. I don't think that's water that's in your glass. But Eric, can you give us an upbeat message that can keep supporters engaged and give them some hope for the coming days, weeks, and how this season might pan out?
An upbeat message. Shin Yamada will morph into Kyogre for Ohashi. Johnny Kenny's going to have the season of a lifetime. He'll become. They'll be knocking on the transfer or on the transfer door next season to buy him for 10 million plus, and Brendan Rodgers will get a tune out of Iheanacho, and he'll score 20 plus goals this season. That's being overly optimistic, I would say. No, I mean, look, if I want to give a positive message is change is coming. That's it. Change is coming. It's gone too far now, and I can guarantee you that we're going to see big changes this season. These guys know that they've overstayed their welcome. They crossed the line this summer. There's no coming back from that. So change is coming, and change that is going to be much better for our club, and that is going to make us realise our ambitions. So that's my positive message.
That sounds decent. I'm just thinking there, if the board hadn't been so determined to undermine Brendan Rodgers, they could have still kept a cosy little cabal of staying a few points ahead of their friends at Ibrox, minimal investment in the squad, turn up the Champions League, get four paydays with the squad in the current state they're in, pat themselves in the back that they're at the centre of all things Europe, blah, blah, blah. But they overstepped the mark. They went too far to undermine the manager. Hopefully it comes back to bite them on their backsides. I was going to add some extra description of their backsides, but I'll leave it at that. So, James, you've got a bit more depth than most of us. Your analogies from politics, from film, whatever, they're very deep. But give us a pure football football message about what the Celtic sports can do over the next couple of days and weeks, and how we can keep the pressure on those guys that live in heated driveways, that are accountants, lawyers, that have got no clue about modern football, and how can we help drive them out their driveways and bring in a modern football club at Celtic that can perhaps finally work towards maximising its potential?
Well, we're in a place now where almost all of us agree that something has to be done and something has to change. What we have to be mindful of now is that we've got something like unity is that we keep it and we don't all start falling out and bickering over what form action might have to take at some future stage. Now, as I said, these guys have got a chance to present us with a plan and give us something that we can believe in until the transition is made between one. version of Celtic and the renewed version of Celtic. But if it comes to the crunch and we're going to have to try and force action here, there will be a lot of arguments about how we do it. And what we do not want is we don't want fans falling out with each other. Oh, but the best way is there are various ways to show the love. Some people are going to show that they love the club by continuing to attend every game, by continuing to buy every ticket and buy every jersey and whatnot. Other people are going to show that they love Celtic by not doing any of that. And the guys who do all that stuff are going to have to recognise that the guys who don't love Celtic the same as they do, and the guys who don't are going to have to recognise that the guys who do love Celtic the same way they do. It's just a different expression. There are things that we can all do. Believe it or not, one of the things that moves politicians is when you send an email to their secretaries and their constituency offices. And there is a version of that we can do at Celtic. One of the things that Celtic is forever keeping track of is its social media engagement. So the first thing everybody should do if they want to make a difference, and believe me, this will make a difference if we all do it at the same time, or we all do it over a period of weeks, is unsubscribe for every single one of Celtic's marketing emails. If you want to buy stuff in the Celtic store, you can still buy it. But unsubscribe for all the marketing emails. Unsubscribe for any email that Celtic is going to send you, except the basic ones that you need to function as a Celtic fan. If you're following Celtic on social media, unfollow them. If you're following any branch of Celtic on social media, unfollow them. There are, believe it or not, people who get paid to keep an eye on that stuff. And if they see a major drop in numbers, they will panic. Sponsors will panic. People will wonder what the hell is going on. That kind of disengagement is important, right? Equally important is people talking about pulling out the Home Cup ticket scheme. I wrote about this yesterday. The Home Cup ticket scheme is now a coercive policy. It forces you to buy tickets for every home game, whether you like it or not. And the more people who withdraw from that, the better. You don't have to stop going. But the Home Cup ticket scheme means you have no choice but to buy a ticket, whether you intend to go or not. And the less people who are on that, the better. And the closer we are collapsing that system entirely. The affiliation has made a statement in the last couple of days, and they are pretty pissed off. The Celtic Supporters Association has to get off the fence and make a statement next. A possible policy for the future is the association and the affiliation recommending to all their buses that they all withdraw from the Home Cup ticket scheme. If the Home Cup ticket scheme gets a mass withdrawal like that, then it's done. It collapses instantly. And that means two things. It means fans can no longer be coerced to attend every home game, whether they like it or not. And it means that the club has to put something in its place. And that means coming back and honestly engaging with fans and talking to them properly. See, if the club wants to reduce us to the point where we're just customers, every customer who ever went into a shop has a fundamental right to go into another shop if they feel messed about or they feel overpriced or whatever, overcharged or whatever, right? That's a fundamental right that the club will give us back. And there is power in that, whether a lot of fans realise it or not. We are, if the board is determined to treat us as consumers of a product, then maybe we should pick and choose how we consume it and when we consume it and where we consume it. And you can still love Celtic while not attending Celtic Park. A lot of people have done it for years. Yep. Don't think you have no power. You have plenty of power.
Yep. On that note, you don't need to wait for instructions. You don't need to wait for someone else telling you. If you're uncomfortable with anything, don't do it. It doesn't make you any less of a person. You're not less of a pure Celtic man if you've not got the latest this, that, and the next thing. But we'll call it a halt for now. We'll be back again on Monday at 6:30. Unless there's some resignations from the board between now and Monday, you'll not be hearing from us. You'll just need to read us. So I'll leave it for now. I'll thank my colleagues, Eric and James, and another good, healthy debate. And who knows what's next, but we'll be back again. Thanks for looking in. Please like And those that have been on it live, if you can return in 5 minutes' time and add some comments, those comments will stay on the YouTube page as opposed to the live comments. So thanks again for tuning in. Good interaction. A few BAMs out there, but we don't need to worry about them. And we'll be back again on Monday. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks a million, Joe. And we'll talk to you on the next one. Take it easy.